experience it. You can say, oh, it's cool, it's you know, I don't know what you say about blue, soothing, it's happy, you know, whatever. You can never explain blue to a blind person. And that's what we're trying to, you know, Jesus is trying to explain reality to a blind person, a person who cannot possibly understand what reality is. And so we can take it in as a concept, and we can believe it. It can be part of our belief, but it doesn't make it real until you experience it yourself. And when you experience it yourself, then you have no choice but to believe. So let me kind of clue you all in on what's going on today. I'm your admin this morning for the gathering, and so hopefully I'll remember where all those links are. Film and hope you are patient with me if I don't quite, but I'll get there. And and so I'm in Santa Barbara at the Old Mission, and here at a satsang retreat with Regina Don Akers and Timothy Conway and Magdi MB and Kirtana. And it has just been the most amazing experience. I know, really kind of know now, one of the reasons that I came was so that I could know what the experience is, so that I can expect or help other people know what a great thing it is to be able to come to a retreat like this. I'm sure there's a lot of people that, you know, are going to wish that they were here. I mean, that do wish that they were here, because we're being exposed to some really, really amazing music and teaching and joining and just getting to know a lot of people that I only know through the radio or who I never met or met through Facebook. And it is a wonderful thing. So, and there are quite a few people here. I'm not sure how many, about 40, I think. So that's a pretty good turnout for something like this. I'm here. Today's the last day I'm here, and then I'm going up to San Francisco with Alex and Sabrina. So that's going to be really fun, too, because I get to spend time with Alex and Sabrina. Yay. And I'm going to go to the Attitudinal Healing International conference and workshops and become certified to facilitate attitudinal healing, the circles and such. And so that is very, very helpful to me. And I think that it's a good work. It's a very good work. I've been doing that work on myself. You know, if it works on yourself, then you can definitely recommend it to other people or help other people with it. So that's really makes me joyful, too, to have that ability. So let's see, what else is going on? Oh, tonight Kathy Smith is going to be our guest speaker at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. And so that'll be wonderful to hear Kathy. And then we'll kind of see what happens with the schedule as far as who will be here and who will not, because a lot of people are here in Santa Barbara. Barb DeWater is here. Dove says he may be on at 7 if Regina is not. I'm thinking Regina is not. I'll talk with her today and find out. I don't know. Who knows? I guess Regina knows. anyway, it looks like it's getting to be about that time. Our minister this morning is Reverend Phil Frisk, who I see here in the room. Yeah, I'm on at 9 and 10. I do the original edition study group with Jacqueline Eckert. And, oh, Tom Conway is here. And David Hemphill. And, oh, my gosh, Lynn Turner, a bunch of people are here. So it's really, really wonderful. And it's a joyful gathering. So anyway, it is time now to turn the mic over to our minister, Phil Frisk, for our weekly gathering. Phil, the mic is all yours.
Well, thank you, Lynn, and welcome, everyone. Thank you for your attendance today at our weekly gathering. Many of our members, as Lynn mentioned, are at the Awakening Together Satsang Retreat in the Old Mission in Santa Barbara, California, with Conway and Magdi and Kirtana. But we're glad that you met with us here online in the Pal Talk room. It's a time to join together online for a worship service of music and fellowship and teaching and meditation and contemplation. And it's a time just for being together, and we call that a gathering. And it's our custom to greet each other as we join together in our online sanctuary for our weekly assembly. If we were in a physical room, in a brick-and-mortar church, as they call it, instead of a virtual room, we would turn to the person next to us and give them a warm greeting or a big hug. So we use the Pal Talk message board in order to send greetings to each other, and you can send greetings to your to the other members as I play some music.
We are awakening to the call of the mystic. Awakening in the flowering of the heart, everybody. Melting into presence, overflowing effervescence, rising in love.
So the purpose of awakening together is to awaken to our one true self. We are an online assembly of peers dedicated to recognizing and embracing universal wisdom, regardless of the form in which it appears. And Lynn may post a link to our website here where you can read more about our purpose and values. And for those listening on the radio, the website link is www.awakening-together.org. And then look under About Us and Purpose and Values. And we're very happy to have you join us formally, if you're not yet a member, at the Join Us link on our website. And here's a quick summary of our core values. We have five core values, and I'll just briefly outline them. One, we trust an unique inner guidance leading us to awaken to our one true self. Two, we realize everyone is equal, with no authority over the spiritual intuition of others. And three, we accept one changeless, non-dual presence or being as our true self. And four, without idolizing any spiritual doctrine, we affirm one true self as the only truth. And five, we accept all forms as temporary appearances while we reflect on changeless truth. I have a couple of other items of upcoming events. Bantino Massaro will be our Awakening Together Satsang guest on Sunday, September the 21st at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Who is Bantino Massaro? Well, here's a quote from Bretta Goth in Berkeley, California. She says, Bantino is an iconoclast of spiritual culture. He's a breath of fresh air in a sea of similar voices. He embodies potent magic, infinite depth, brain surgery clarity in a combination difficult to imagine without soaking in and living out what he's offering. He points to a freedom everyone desires and many speak to, with creativity and an abundantly fresh toolbox of practical techniques. The quality of freedom he's offering has an acceleration factor that imparts human life in profound ways, ushering us into a whole new level of human evolution. So, Bantino Massaro will be our satsang leader in our online sanctuary next Sunday, September 21st at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And then also Jan Frazier will be our guest on Sunday, October 19th. And who is Jan Frazier? Well, Jan studied English in college and graduate school in Miami in the 1960s. In her late 20s, she moved to New England, where she was active in the peace movement. But inner peace she sought always eluded her. And Jan Frazier lived a life typical for a Catholic-raised, well-educated, middle-class American woman. Divorced with two teenagers, she was making a modest living, writing and teaching. But then in August of 2003, at the age of 50, she experienced a radical transformation of consciousness. Fear fell away from her when she was immersed in a state of ceaseless joy that has never left her. Her wish now is to communicate the truth that within every person there is a pool of calm well-being that awaits patiently to be stirred into life. Her first of three books, When Fear Falls Away, The Story of a Sudden Awakening, is Jan's day-by-day account of the shift in consciousness and its alteration of her life. And Jan will be our satsang leader in our online sanctuary on Sunday, October 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And don't forget Dove's class starting tomorrow. You can talk to Dove Peace, David Fishman, to get more information about that if you're interested in joining that class tomorrow. So let's have some opening music to begin our online sanctuary this morning. This is Stone by Stone by Buddy Comfort from the movie it's called Brother Sun, Sister Moon.
life free. Take your time, go slowly. Do few things, but do them well. Simple joys are holy. Day by day, stone by stone, build your secret slowly. Day by day, you'll grow too. You'll know heaven's glory. If you want your dream to be built with children, small beginning, greater end.
Stone by Stone by Buddy Comfort, and that's from the movie Brother Sun, Sister Moon. And I believe that movie is going to be shown this week in Santa Barbara at the Soak in the Beauty retreat after the retreat that's going on this weekend. So now it's time for our invocation. So let's join our hearts and minds. I was raised in a church-going family, and I learned all of the Bible stories growing up. And one of the most comforting passages to me as a child was located at the very center of my Bible. In the Old Testament, in the book of Psalms, let's listen to the words of the psalmist of the Old Testament, King David, with the 23rd Psalm. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Amen. So now is the time on our schedule for our reading by a member. Our reader today is Judy Frisk. Judy will be reading Finding Who You Truly Are from A New Earth, Awakening to Your Life's Purpose, by Eckhart Tolle.
This morning I'm going to be reading From A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle and the Chapter 7, Awakening to Your Life's Purpose. Finding Who You Truly Are. Know thyself. These words were inscribed above the entrance to the Temple of Apollo at Delphi, site of the sacred oracle. In ancient Greece, people would visit the oracle, hoping to find out what destiny had in store for them or what course of action to take in a particular situation. It's likely that most visitors read those words as they entered the building without realizing that they pointed to a deeper truth than anything the oracle could possibly tell them. They may not have realized either that no matter how great a revelation or how accurate the information they received, it would ultimately prove to be of no avail, would not save them from further unhappiness and self-created suffering if they failed to find the truth that is concealed in that injunction, know thyself. What those words imply is this: before you ask any other question, first, ask the most fundamental question of your life, who am I? Unconscious people will quickly tell you who they are, their name, occupation, their personal history, the shape or state of their body, and whatever else they identify with. Others may appear to be more evolved because they think of themselves as an immortal soul or divine spirit. But do they really know themselves? or had they just added some spiritual-sounding concepts to the content of their mind? Knowing yourself goes far deeper than the adoption of a set of ideas or beliefs. Spiritual ideas and beliefs may at best be helpful pointers, but in themselves they rarely have the power to dislodge the more firmly established core concepts of who you think you are, which are part of the conditioning of the human mind. Knowing yourself deeply has nothing to do with whatever ideas are floating around in your mind. Knowing yourself is to be rooted in being instead of lost in your mind. Who you think you are. Your sense of who you are determines what you perceive as your needs and what matters to you in life. And whatever matters to you will have the power to upset and disturb you. You can use this as a criterion to find out how deeply you know yourself. What matters to you is not necessarily what you say or believe, but what your actions and reactions reveal as important and serious to you. So you may want to ask yourself the question, what are the things that upset and disturb me? If small things have the power to disturb you, then who you think you are is exactly that, small. That will be your unconscious belief. What are the small things? Ultimately, all things are small things because all things are transient. You might say, I know I'm an immortal spirit, or I am tired of this mad world and peace is all I want. Until the phone rings, bad news, the stock market has collapsed, the deal may fall through, the car has been stolen, the trip is canceled, the contract has been broken, your fault. Suddenly there is a surge of anger, of anxiety. A harshness comes into your voice. I can't take any more of this. You accuse and blame, attack, defend, or justify yourself. And it's all happening on autopilot. Something is obviously much more important to you now than the inner peace that a moment ago you said was all you wanted. And you're not an immortal spirit anymore either. The deal, the money, the contract, the loss or threat of loss are more important. To whom? To the immortal spirit that you said you are? No. To me, the small me, that seeks security or fulfillment in things that are transient and gets anxious or angry because it fails to find it. Well, at least now you know who you really think you are. If peace is really what you want, then you will choose peace. If peace mattered to you more than anything else, and if you truly knew yourself to be spirit rather than a little me, you would remain non-reactive and absolutely alert when confronted with challenging people or situations. You would immediately accept the situation and thus become one with it rather than separate yourself from it. Then, out of your alertness, would come a response. Who you are, consciousness, not who you think you are, a small me, would be responding. It would be powerful and effective and would make no person or situation into an enemy. The world always makes sure that you cannot fool yourself for long about who you really think you are by showing you what truly matters to you. How you react to people and situations, especially when challenges arise, is the best indicator of how deeply you know yourself. The more limited, egoic view of yourself, the more you will see the unconscious in others. Their faults, or what you perceive as their fault, become to you their identity. This means you will see only the ego in them and thus strengthen the ego in yourself. Instead of looking through the ego in others, you are looking at the ego. Who is looking at the ego? The ego in you. Very unconscious people experience their own ego through its reflection in others. When you realize that what you react to in others is also in you, you begin to become aware of your own ego. At that stage, you may also realize that you were doing to others what you thought others were doing to you. You cease seeing yourself as a victim. You are not the ego, so when you become aware of the ego in you, it does not mean you know who you are. It means you know who you are not. But it is through knowing who you are not that the greatest obstacle to truly knowing yourself is removed. Nobody can tell you who you are. It would be just another concept, so it would not change you. Who you are requires no belief. In fact, every belief is an obstacle. It does not even require your realization, since you already are who you are. But without realization, who you are does not shine forth into this world. It remains in the unmanifested, which is, of course, your true home.
Thank you, Judy. Judy was reading from A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle, the passage, Finding Who You Truly Are. And I like what Eckhart Tolle said. You are not the ego, so when you become aware of the ego in you, it does not mean you know who you are. It means you know who you are not. But it is through knowing who you are not that the greatest obstacle to truly knowing yourself is removed. One of the first things that Regina scribed almost 10 years ago was an article that I entitled, The Ego is Not the Devil, and I posted it on my website, Miracles Center Us, in 2005. In fact, that's how we met. While browsing the internet, Regina happened upon my website and noticed her article posted there. She must have thought, who is this guy promoting my writing? So then she wrote to me an email introducing herself. And then later that year, she was guided to form the Foundation for the Holy Spirit with her co-founders, David Fishman and me. Regina wrote, "The ego is not the devil. It is a force outside of you that finds pleasure in deceiving you. It isn't anything to struggle against or fear, although it can feel as if it is. The ego is nothing but a belief in your mind. When the belief is gone, you will see that the ego was nothing." Here's a quote from Gerald May in his book, The Awakened Heart. "We, in modern Western culture, have gone just a little bit crazy about finding out who we really are. From psychological individuation to genealogical roots, from archetypes to mythology, to masculine and feminine identity, from personality typing to astrology, from addiction recovery to childhood abuse recovery, we go from fad to fad, asking, who am I, and who am I meant to become? We know our true dignity does not depend upon our descriptions of ourselves." End of quote. Human beings, down through the ages and all around the world, have wondered about the true nature of the self from many different perspectives. To investigate this question, they've turned to religion for answers. The world's greatest mystics have a common message. There is a reality which is indivisible, one, alone, and the source and being of all. Not a thing, nor even a mind, but pure spirit or consciousness, and we are that. And nothing but that, for that is our true nature. And the only way to find it is to look within, where are to be found love, peace, joy, and eternal life itself. Science attempts to answer the question by describing you as cells, molecules, atoms, and particles. Viewed from further away, your body becomes absorbed into the rest of society, life, the planet, the star, the galaxy. Science's objective view of you, zooming towards and away from you, reveals a hierarchy, an organized system of layers that is alive, intelligent, and beautiful. Thus, you have many layers, like an onion. You need every one of these layers to exist. Your human identity, vital and important as it is just one of these layers. What you are, or what are you, at the center of these many layers? Scientists cannot say, because the scientist can only observe you from a distance. However, when she gets close to you, she remains outside of you. What or who you really are, the ground of your being, remains a mystery. You are not distant from yourself, not outside yourself. You, and you alone, are therefore perfectly placed to see what you are at center. And all you have to do is look. A contemporary and Western way of seeing into one's nature, or enlightenment, has been developing in recent years. In essence, it's the same as Zen, Sufism, and other spiritual disciplines. It claims that rather than spending years of reading, lecture attending, thinking, rituals, and meditation of the traditional sort, modern man is more likely to see who he really is in a minute of active experimentation. This form of self-realization uses a variety of simple, nonverbal, fact-finding tests, all of them asking, how do I look to myself? The experiments direct my attention to my blind spot, to the space that I occupy, to what's given right here at the center of my universe, to what it's like being first person singular, present tense. I'd like to explore these methods with you by looking at several teachers and their methods of self-inquiry. I will share examples of self-realization from four luminaries who describe the process they use to point others in opening their third eye. First of all, there's Ramana Maharshi. He's the Who Am I guy. The heart of Ramana Maharshi's teaching is found in a small booklet entitled Who Am I? This little booklet contains the first set of instructions given by Ramana Maharshi, and they are direct from his unique experience of self-realization. The power of the teaching can be realized by anyone who puts it into practice. Ramana Maharshi says, and I quote, let him find out to whom are the thoughts, from where they arise. They must spring up from the conscious self. Apprehending even vaguely helps the extinction of the ego. Therefore, the realization of one infinite existence becomes possible. In that state, individuals other than the eternal existence. Hence, there is no thought of death or suffering. End quote. He goes on to explain that everything, every living being, longs to be happy, untainted by sorrow, and everyone has the greatest love for himself, which is solely due to the fact that happiness is his real nature. Hence, in order to realize that inherent and untainted happiness, which indeed he experiences daily when the mind is subdued in deep sleep, it is essential that he should know himself. For obtaining such knowledge, the inquiry, "Who am I?" in quest of the self, is the best means. "Who am I?" is pure, "I am pure awareness." This awareness, by its very nature, is being, consciousness, bliss. The next of the luminaries is Douglas Harding, and he's the headless way guy. He says, "Who are you really? Not who are you in other people's eyes, or in the mirror, or according to your beliefs of unexamined assumptions, but in your own direct experience. Great spiritual teachers say you are not your appearance. Deep down, secretly, nearer to you than your breathing, you are capacity for the world. They say that to discover this wonderful truth about yourself, you must look simply and innocently, as a child looks. Where do you look? Right where you are, at the looker. When? Now. To see who you really are, carry out the following experiment. Remember the pointing to the moon experiment? You look at the object to which the finger is pointing. Well, when you point anywhere in the world, you point at appearances. You are distant from what you are looking at, and you see things. You see objects. Observe this. Direct your attention at things by pointing at them. And it's imperative that you actually do the experiment. So, for example, I can see the shapes and colors of this room, of my foot, of my knee, of my chest. In all of these instances, attention is pointed outwards at objects. Now, point to where others see your face. What do you see? You are now looking inwards, turning the direction of your attention around 180 degrees from the objects out there to you, the subject, to the place you're looking out of. Do you see your face? Do you see anything at all there? Any color or shape or movement? No. You never see your face unless you're looking in a mirror. You appear to be headless. Looking into the place where other people see your face, I find no color or shape here. I find boundless capacity or awareness this side of my pointing finger. This capacity is empty, clear, transparent. It is self-evidently awake, aware. At the same time, this capacity is full of everything happening in it. My finger, my view of the scene beyond, sounds and feelings. Now I am seeing who I really am, seeing the boundless one at the very heart of myself, the one in whom the world is happening. What do you find? Are you also looking out of this wide open, crystal clear awareness? I don't find myself inside a head, looking out through two holes at the distant world. Headless, I am looking out of one boundless opening that just goes on forever and ever, inwards, upwards, downwards, sideways. My world is presented at no distance in this single eye, in this clear, still consciousness, what a profoundly different way of being in the world, seeing that the world is in you. Thich Nhat Hanh said, "The miracle is not to walk on water. The miracle is to walk on the green earth, dwelling deeply in the purest present moment and feeling truly alive." And then there is John Sherman. He's the Just One Look guy. Since August of 2001, John Sherman has lived in Ojai, California with his wife and partner, Kala. John found true freedom by means of an extremely simple act of attention. Looking at myself. John states, "One day, in a very vivid recollection of myself as a young child, it overtook me of who I was. I was about 8 years old, coming out of a James Stewart movie on a bright summer's day in Camden, New Jersey. I suddenly had the actual experience of what it felt like to be me back then. Just me, without regard to my thoughts or my ideas, my history or my physical being. Simply what it felt like to be me." Following the memory of that experience, my sense of spiritual longing simply went away. The whole business just didn't seem to be important any longer. I felt calm, content, and unconcerned with much of anything. At the time, I did not connect my newfound contentment with anything that I had done. It would still take me quite a few years to realize what had really happened to me. I did, however, find myself returning to that feeling of me from time to time over the next several years. Life felt so simple. I was happy, not blissful or enlightened, just happy and content with being alive. Here's a quote from his book, The Radical Act of Inward Looking. "With inward looking, the context in which experience arises is initially and directly challenged or changed by the act itself, resulting in a subsequently less defended exposure to the feared environment, life. In turn, many of the neuroses constructed out of the fear-based context begin to fall away because there's no longer any context to support them. On an experiential level, they become irrelevant. Over time, this allows for the possibility of having an increased natural relationship with life." End quote. So he talks about the direct look method. And what do we mean by look? Looking is what we do naturally when we focus our attention on anything present in our consciousness. The act that we call looking at yourself washes away the fear of life and heals the mind of anyone who will try it. So step one is close your eyes and notice the symphony of sensations and thoughts about the sensations arising and falling within you. Step two, notice that you can move your attention from one or another sensation or thought at will. And step three, now use that same beam of attention to look for the feel of what you would call me. It's a faint sensation that is what you feel like to yourself. And that's it. You've done all that needs to be done to bring you home to the beauty and satisfaction that are to be found in a human life lived without fear. And I find this process very similar to Douglas Harding's The Headless Way. And finally, we have Jerry Downs. He's the Why You Were Born guy. Jerry Downs is a friend of mine whom I have known since the 1970s. He is an artist, a photographer, a writer, and his book, Why You Were Born, was just published. It contains hundreds of his photographs and his other works of art, along with a fascinating journey of his life's story. His photographic images are somewhat quirky, but always positive, showing what's right with the world. His vision is quite unique, noticing the humor as well as the beauty in portraying the essential meaning of the path of life. Jerry sees the world through childlike eyes of a self-realized individual. Jesus said, "I tell you truly, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven." This is Matthew 8:3. Jerry Downs expresses it beautifully in his book. He says, "Ultimately, of course, there is no path. It's just a metaphor, a way to tour the vast expanse of the mystery. It is just a format to help us discover and expand ourselves as our sense of self. I admit, for me, this revelation at first brought me to a dead stop. I mean, if this is all it, what's the purpose of going on? If my love of something or someone wasn't based on how they compared to something or someone else I didn't love, if all things were equal, if this is all there is, just what is the point?" This way of thinking was, of course, just a short, just a conceit, an illusion, one more marker on the path. I thought I had made sense of it, but it just didn't feel right. It took me a while before it dawned on me that how I felt was more important than what I thought. It took me even longer to realize that was just another thought. Then it took some time to stop thinking, stop making thinking something bad. I had to unlearn all the spiritual teachings that had been made, that had made the body, the brain, something to overcome before I could get to. As they variously described it, nirvana, heaven, and my true self, I had to give up their path. I had to give up my path. Having come up with so many clever ways to get to it, it took a while to discover a way to actually hold it. Then something wonderful happened. It wasn't a dream. I wasn't walking in a redwood forest. I was just walking down the street, daydreaming. I saw a thought that elicited the most marvelous feeling. I remembered myself as a little kid, with arms extended, spinning around just to make myself dizzy, just to know what it felt like. Suddenly, I was that child, laughing out loud as I fell to the ground, resting there until the tree above me stopped spinning. I laid there and just looked at the color blue in the sky. I had to think about what I knew as a child. As a child, it wasn't something that I had to think about. It wasn't something that needed to be explained. I just knew it. It wasn't something that I had to earn or deserve. I owned it. Not only was it mine, it was me. I saw the reason I was born and how I came to forget. Buddha said, "When you realize how perfect everything is, you will tilt your head back and laugh at the sky. So become the observer of thoughts. Living in the present moment is not natural anymore. In fact, people are happy just sitting there doing nothing as long as they have thoughts to entertain them. Otherwise, boredom becomes the dominant factor. Therefore, the more that you can become the observer of thoughts, the more presence, self-awareness, and intuition you will have. The way to connect to your intuition is by being in the now and observing the thoughts without giving the thoughts energy. Just observe the thoughts that come and go as nothing more than imagination. This imagination is the mind. The mind is thoughts. The mind of past, intuition, happens quite naturally when there is no link to the past. When you can fully embrace the now without giving the past significance, then you are fully aligned with self-realization. Thoughts happen, thoughts arise, there's nothing you can do about that. Yet, you can be present and observe the thoughts happening without connecting to those thoughts as something real. The past is gone, totally dead, never here. You can't get the past back. The past is just that, the past. The now is never what it is. It's when you attach meaning to the now that the past becomes significant. The more you see the past stories in your mind that the mind plays, the less the past will have meaning to you, and the more you can be here in the present. The mind, or thought, has been the focal point for such a long time that this is going to take some practice. Practice, practice, practice. Mindfulness also involves acceptance, meaning that we have to pay attention to our thoughts and feelings without judging them, without believing, for instance, that there is a right or a wrong way to think or feel in a given moment. When we practice mindfulness, our thoughts tune in to what we're sensing in the present moment, rather than rehashing the past or imagining the future. Love is supreme. Love is the source we came from and what we return to after death. Learning to be loving is what life is all about. Mindfulness means maintaining a moment-by-moment awareness of our thoughts and feelings and body sensations and surrounding environment. The more that we can remain neutral, mindful, and self-aware, the more we can stay in the awakening zone. Now it's time for our worship service in our schedule to have the open meditation or contemplation. So I will play some meditation movie music here. And you can think about maybe some experience that you've had in your self-realization, like the experiences that I've described in the luminaries that I talked about and their methods of becoming awake. And this is also the time that we remind you that Awakening Together is supported by your donations. We hope you value the assembly and choose to support it with financial contributions. But donating is always only a choice and not required. So if your heart guides you to make a donation now, or to commit to a monthly subscription donation, you can click on the donation link at our website. And Lynn has posted a message on the message board of the link to the donation site on our website. And we thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, that was Kirtana, and that was Ramana's song. So now we have about 10 minutes for sharing, and I invite you to share your thoughts based on today's teaching. Just raise your hand, and I will pass the mic over to you. Okay, Doug, I'm turning the mic over to you.
All right, thank you so much, Phil. That certainly was a nice way of looking at how different people do practice different ways to really arrive at the same place. I want to say I especially enjoyed the reading that Judy did. Eckhart Tolle's book, The New Earth, where he was very clearly said, hey, listen, now depending on where you are, if you have different ideas of who am I, somebody who is deeply dreaming and sleeping will say, well, you know, I'm a housewife, I'm a teacher, I'm a doctor, lawyer, Indian chief kind of thing, and then as you get into reading books and visiting spiritual communities, all of a sudden you are the Holy Son of God himself. Until somebody steps on your toes and then you scream, you stupid fool, you, why don't you watch where you're going? And it's always like we are always in different places looking at the whole picture from different filters, different angles, and yet it is our job. I think I did hear her say, reading that concepts are beliefs, and beliefs will actually filter out the experience because the concept is already a mask coloring over the experience, so you already think you know everything. So that's why saying I do not know really unlocks so many doors. Do not know. Thank you so much, Phil. Thank you so much, Judy. Okay, turn this mic back to you, Phil. Are you saying the volume is very low? Really? I don't know. The volume shouldn't be low at all, but... Oh! Yeah, the volume was very low. I apologize. Okay, I really apologize. Okay, I wasn't looking at the board. I have two mics here, and I was speaking through the mic that wasn't connected. You gotta laugh. I guess that's what concepts are. Concepts are speaking through a mic that is not connected. What I was saying is I really enjoyed Judy's I really was enjoying Judy's reading from Eckhart Tolle's The New Earth, in which he was saying it depends on where you are and I guess the equipment that you're looking through. You may think that what you're saying is very clear, but actually there is no experience there at all other than tossing concepts in the air while I'm still sleeping in a very deep, dreamy sleep. So as we evolve, as we grow, as we begin to practice exactly what the Course in Miracles says, your task is to remove the blockages to your awareness of love's presence. So there's nothing that I need to grow into. I just have to remove more clutter Miracles are everyone's right, but purification is necessary first. Number 7, Miracles Principle. Thank you so much, Phil. And back to you, Phil and Judy. Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you, Doug. And it's so much more enjoyable to listen to you when you're talking in the right mic. Okay. Thank you. So is there anyone else that would like to take the mic speak to your experience? We still have a few minutes. If anyone would like to raise your hand and take the mic, I'd be happy to turn the mic over to you. I guess I could also tell you about an experience that I had when I was a child. I was about maybe 8 or 9 years old. Could have been 7. I don't remember exactly, but my experience of self-realization came one day when I was standing at the sink in the bathroom in front of the mirror, and looking in the mirror, all of a sudden there was a tremendous, shocking experience that happened where I became the person in the mirror looking back at me. In fact, the whole universe turned inside out, and I was just there in the experience of being at one with the universe. The experience was frightening to me. I thought maybe I was losing my mind or something, where all of a sudden I couldn't determine which one was me. Was I the person in the mirror looking back out, or was I the person in front of the mirror looking in? And it was kind of a mind-blowing experience of a sudden kind of an awakening of who I really was. Not the person in this body, but rather the my body was in the universe, and the universe was in my body, the whole universe. So, you know, it was kind of an experience that that I have gone back and remembered from time to time, realizing that later on that was a normal, natural occurrence of a self-realization that just happened suddenly, unexpectedly, and without explanation. It was something that later on in life I realized, you know, that was my being able to see the totality of the universe, and in, you know, later years when I began more deep search for spirituality, I realized, you know, that I was given a huge gift at that time. Well, so if there are no other comments, I'd like to go ahead and play our closing number. This is Heaven. The title is Heaven by Jessica Lang. So I'd like to thank you all for your attendance today, and thanks to our reading assistant, Judy Frisk, and to our administrator, Lynn Johnson, and please stay and join us for an hour of fellowship right here, right now, in this room. So now I will turn the mic back over to Lynn. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Phil and Judy, and thank you, everyone who's been here. It's great. Hello, Robbie. my computer died right there at the end, but no worries. There's always backup upon backup upon backup. And, you know, what I've learned, hey, Regis, what I have learned for sure, completely no doubt whatsoever, God is actually in control. You know, people, they'll say, you know, God is not aware of this world, and that's a possibility. God is not aware of my dreams, what stories I'm making up. God's not aware of that because God knows that that's not true. He doesn't believe me, believe my thoughts. And he's not interested in entertaining himself by looking at my tales of woe. Whoa. So, you know what? That is not what he's, why would he see something unreal? He wouldn't. But God is very much in control of everything because God is in everything. There is an actual a script going on. I'm a part of it. You're a part of it. Not who I really am, but the part, the play, the maya, the watching that, you know, I'm watching everything. I had the greatest experience on Friday when I was flying out here to Santa Barbara, and I got on a, good morning, Kirtana just came in the room. I'm sorry, I'm being silly. They just played one of your songs at the service, and so I was just telling them how wonderful that was last night. So thank you. Oh, gosh. This is just like heaven. Heaven is a place where nothing ever happens. I know, it's so cool. So so anyway, she was putting her milk in the fridge. That's very cool too. I know, I love it. So I was on that airplane, I was coming out, and the girl who sat next to me was a Mormon, and she was on her way to Santa Barbara for her missionary. She's a missionary, and she's coming here to be a missionary in Santa Barbara, which really, you know, when I thought about it yesterday, I went on a tour of the mission here, which was, of course, by missionaries, and, hey, Paul, and it really made me think about the role of the mission, the role of the missionary, what it is that we're doing here, and, So we started talking, and, you know, she was obviously, you know, very interested in telling me something, but she didn't tell me anything. She just said that she was a Mormon, and, you know, I asked her a lot of questions because I don't really know anything about that religion. And so, and that's what I told her. All I know is rumors, things I've heard, things I've read, things that people have said. But, you know, what do I know of what it really is? I don't. It's, you know, it's a story I make up in my head about any of it. So I was asking her about all the different things. You know, what is it that you think about this? And I asked her, I said, what do you think happens when we die? And she said, well, my church teaches me, and I said, no, I don't want to hear what your church teaches you. I want to hear what you think happens. What is in your thoughts about it? And she said, well, what is in my thoughts is what my church teaches me, because that's the truth, and I, you know, I'm not going to think about anything that's not the truth. And so I said, well, okay, that's, you know, that's as valid as anything I could tell you. So, you know, can you explain it to me? And she explained, it was a very interesting story about, and, you know, I don't know how accurate my rendition of it is, but that, you know, this one,